Welcome to the Open Source for DevOps Practices Jumpstart. We have a lot of really good things in store for you today. Up first, I'll give a little bit about myself. I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft. I have been an IT guy since 1998, so focused on that audience for quite some time. Been at Microsoft for about 12 years. And I focus on DevOps. So there's plenty of information about myself, but here we have our special guest today, Ross.
Hey, good morning. So I'm Ross Gardler. I work for a company called Microsoft Open Technologies Incorporated. We're a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft. And we specialize in the interoperability between open source and Microsoft technologies and non-Microsoft technologies and Microsoft technologies. As I say, we work a lot in open source. We work a lot in open standards as well. My background is very much in open source. I've been with Microsoft OpenTech for a couple of years now. I've been in open source for about 20 years. And that's why I'm here today to talk about all this lovely open source tooling that we want to know about in the DevOps space.
Very much so. Okay. Well, we're going to set the groundwork for the day here. So first off, we're going to let you know what we're going to cover. We are going really through a kind of an end-to-end storyline here from kind of start to finish, beginning with a really kind of condensed view of DevOps and what that means here right immediately after this. And then we walk through kind of Azure fundamentals, source code repos, creating reproducible environments, doing automated testing, going all the way through till in a typical environment where you might be monitoring and learning from something in that environment. Now, throughout that, we're going to have all kinds of open source tools like Puppet, Chef, Docker. You'll see a bunch of these here later as they relate to these various phases of the life cycle. What to expect? Well, this course really is for if you're a developer or an operations person, it really doesn't matter because these tools could be used by either or both people. When I say level, I say 200-ish because we're probably going to be floating mainly around a 200 level throughout the course of the day. We may go a little bit deeper when we get into some of the demos, so you know that will get a little bit deeper, but roughly around that altitude. Prerequisites, I mean, you need to be naturally a technical kind of person, right?
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
watching this.
Yeah, they are. You're watching this, right? But there is no like prerequisite, like you need to understand Azure. Actually, we're assuming that you don't know anything about Azure. And we're not going to give you an Azure deep dive at all, but it's okay. You know, you may be the person who, let's say, is familiar with open source tools but has never used Azure at all, and this would give you a little bit of an idea of where maybe some of those open source tools integrate with the Microsoft products and solutions that we have. Or you may be on the total opposite side of the fence, right? You might be a Microsoft person that's maybe really familiar with Azure and a lot of the Microsoft technologies, but you just really have not any idea of this open source technology tools world. So ideally today, we really want to give you a kind of a foundational level of knowledge of some of the open source tools that we have and the projects we work on at Microsoft, what those are, and how they relate to the Microsoft tools and technologies.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we captured that well.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
A good high-level overview of many different tools.
Yeah, so you definitely don't expect that you're going to get a deep dive on any one of these tools, right? So if you came here saying, I want the deep dive on blah, Docker, Chef, whatever, you're not going to get that today. There's multiple day workshops and boot camps for any one of these technologies. So just kind of stating that up front. With that, let's shift into the mode of DevOps overview. This is really to set a foundation of making sure we're kind of all on the same page with DevOps, what that means, and how that relates to everything we have here today. So first off, I want to start with a scenario. That scenario is a common thing that people might experience is that there's conflicts across developers, operations, and businesses. So the dev guy is saying, hey, I need 5 more features on the application by next week. And on the business person's concerned, the ops person's concerned saying, hey, you're losing money with all these outages. What's going on, right? So this is this conflict of more features faster and stability, right? So these kind of overarching, you know, two silos that are coming against one another that tends to happen in businesses. And on the other side, right, you know, the ops guy's just, he's frustrated with this because the dev guy's pushing stuff behind his back because a lot of times that ops guy, you know, maybe you're entrenched in old processes and things where it takes 3 weeks or a month or whatever to get something into production, right? And there's this tension that's there,
right,
in environments. You know, and the dev guy's like, hey, I just got to keep up with what the business person's telling me. I need to keep putting,
The dev guy started adopting agile practices and he's pushing at agile speeds.
So that's right.
The ops people are sometimes struggling there.
Right. And they need to kind of catch up, help with the overall business and move things forward. So that's a traditional kind of challenge that we see today with a lot of different organizations. What some businesses do is they go out and they say, oh, we need a DevOps guy.
I know that guy.
Oh, hey. he looks pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
He's got the headphones on. He's jamming out, right? So let's take a step back. I mean, at Microsoft, we don't believe you need to go hire a DevOps person. There certainly are jobs out there you'll find with that title. I don't want to get into that heated debate. But what I will say is that, you know, we do believe that your existing staff of ops and developers likely have the skill sets that they need. They may need to evolve and whatnot, but likely if they collaborate and maybe evolve their skills a little bit, you should be able to do DevOps without having to just go hire somebody else to solve your issues. So I think that's important to state up front here. So what is DevOps though, right? So we've kind of given you a problem scenario. This is the traditional elephant and multiple people blindfolded, feeling different parts of the elephant. What is DevOps? Well, depending on which person you talk to, right, they might say something different. Oh, it's just collaboration. Well, it's infrastructure as code. No, it's automation. No, it's feature switches. Wait, it's small deployments and Kanban? What? You know, Kanban for ops? Right, so these are all like good, you know, interesting concepts, but it's, you know, there's a lot of different, it illustrates the issue of there are a lot of different things that DevOps describes.
Right.
And, you know, there's the acronym that some people use is COMS, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But what is it really, right? What is DevOps? What does it boil down to? At a very high level, DevOps is about people, first and foremost. It's about developers and operations folks working together, right? And it's also about processes. So, you know, if you have people, you know, a developer and operations person just having a really great relationship, but they're conflicted or bounded by these processes that doesn't really facilitate them collaborating, well, then that becomes an issue, right? And then last is tools. So I want to state that, you know, some people out there focus only on the tools. And certainly today, we're going to be talking a lot about tools, right? But it's really important for you to understand that with DevOps, you know, if you don't have the people in the process part, like worked on at least, or kind of starting to go down the right path, then it doesn't matter the most amazing tools that you have in the world, Microsoft or not, doesn't matter.
Right.
You're gonna really hit a roadblock, right? You'll have one guy or maybe two guys that are super awesome at tool XYZ, and they're not collaborating, they're not working together. And so you're not really gonna be doing DevOps if that's the case.
Yeah, right? I mean, the trick is to use the tools to enable the collaboration point,
right,
to break down that thing where we had the picture before with people shouting across the table at one another. Let's give them some early points to collaborate, and the tooling can assist with that, and we'll look at some of the ways that can happen today.
Absolutely. And I mentioned the another acronym some people like to describe what DevOps is COMS, you know, culture, automation, lean software, metrics, and sharing. So you can look that up if you want, but it's another variation of it. In general, you know, it's really hard to define like a two-sentence statement of what DevOps is. If you go to Wikipedia, I have issues with that, as do other people. But I guess so that gives you some context, right, of DevOps. All right, so what can it do, though, to kind of help out your business? You know, because that's great and all, but why do I care as a business owner? Well, one, it's going to really help accelerate your delivery, right? We all care about delivering more software faster to our customers. You know, if ops is not on board with this, you know, it's going to slow things down. If they're working together, you can accelerate the number of releases that you have from developer inception all the way into production. It's also going to help to optimize your resources. So, you have a really efficient system with some of the practices like infrastructure as code that we're going to talk about, you know, it becomes much easier to have a control over what's out there and making sure you're not spending more than you need to and you're not wasting anything. So that's kind of a general theme that you can get or benefit from DevOps. The other thing that you would get is resilience. So when I say resilience, you know, the SLA is down there as one way to measure resilience, but this could come in a lot of different forms, right? You could have auto-scaling policies to help handle load dynamically. You could have a backup strategy. You could have the ability to, if failures happen, recover very quickly, right? So resilience in DevOps and some of these practices will help with that in your business. The other thing that DevOps can help your business with is faster detection and remediation. If you're implementing things like application performance monitoring, if you're doing a number of the things like automated testing that we'll talk about later today, right, you're going to be able to detect ideally errors and issues before they even hit into your production environments. Or if they do hit your production environments, you ideally discover those before your customer does, thereby reducing your mean time to detection, or MTTD, as a common metric people use here in this category. Last but not least, you know, DevOps will help enable this category of experimentation. And what I mean by that is, are you delivering what your customer actually wants to see, right? So, you know, often, you know, an old school kind of way of development practices, you know, with the waterfall style, right, you may take 3 months, 6 months, I don't know, a year, right, to actually get something into production and then discover, oh, wait, like my user doesn't actually like that, or this is just the wrong idea, or you're too late to even get there, right? So DevOps will really help facilitate the experimentation of, let's push a new feature out there really quickly within this week, let's say, and immediately get feedback and understand, you know, is it working? Do people like it? That kind of thing. So to put some meat behind this though, right? Okay, these are all high level good value propositions for why doing DevOps, but there is some good data. And one I like to point to is the Puppet Labs survey that they did, where it states that, you know, they just surveyed thousands of organizations over the 2013 and 2014 DevOps report, and they found that organizations who are performing highly in doing DevOps, they ship code 30 times faster and complete those deployments 8,000 times faster than their peers, right? So, right, they also have 50% fewer failures. So not only are they delivering code faster, but they're also having less failures. So if you think about you as you, the listener out here, and your business, think about your competitors, a startup, or maybe somebody else who's doing this, doing things in this way. How soon is it going to be before they surpass you in your overall organization, right? If they're delivering that much value that quickly to your customers, it becomes really not a, am I doing DevOps or not? It's like, I have to kind of do DevOps just so that I can make sure that I don't get beaten, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's another angle to it as well. Yeah. I mean, if you're deploying faster, you're tying your staff up for a lot less time as well. So even if you're not looking at your competitor, you're looking at your own bottom line. If you're delivering 30 times faster, well, that's 30 times less that you're paying somebody to do that. That's more time for testing, more time for development. So it pays off in every direction.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a number of different practices that this report identified, some of which we're going to get into today through some of these modules. But it just wanted to highlight that, you know, it's a big thing. It's not just a fad or a trend or anything like that. It's got real business value back to the bottom line of your business. And the 2014 report actually dives more into the actual financial impact of that. With that, I want to switch into ALM, and it's really important that we set some framework around what is application lifecycle management, because DevOps is a really evolution of this whole application lifecycle management, and this is what we'll be going through kind of in a general flow throughout the course of the day, right? No matter what you have, you're going to need to do some form of planning. What are we going to develop? You're going to have a development of somebody coding some software, and you're going to have to test it. After that, you're going to, of course, have to release it, deploy it into production, and then finally you're going to do some form of monitoring. Is the thing available? Is it performing? Is there crashes? Those kinds of things, and learning in that production environment. Now, throughout every single phase of this, in a DevOps world, developers and operations and the business should all be working together. Now, most certainly, different folks or different people will have different levels of of interest in different phases. For instance, in the planning phase, you know, ops person might just be involved to give, you know, insight into, hey, once this hits production, we might need to think about compliance or security or capacity planning, these kinds of things, right? You know, so depending on the phase, certain people might be involved in different ways, but in the DevOps world, they all work together. And just so you know, this is kind of a this is not just our thinking. There is this is the Gartner defined view of ALM. So you can see here the wording that we used in the top button says operate, but up there we had monitor and learn. Right? These are all phases that, you know, correlate. And this is a more detailed model so that you have an idea of, hey, there's a lot of other more technical things that go on throughout this whole process. But just so you know, it's not just us coming up with this ALM model. It is an industry-wide type of thing. That being said, if you look at the previous model, the previous section, it's really high level, right? And so today we have some slides here that give you an explanation of where do things fit in, right? Because it's kind of overwhelming when you have all these different technologies and you're like, well, what does what? Well, in an attempt to try and help a little bit solve this challenge, Ross and I have had a lot of discussions
around this. We debate this a lot.
That's right. Ross and I go back and forth a lot on this, and we'll get into this here in a minute. But the attempt here is to try and give you a rough idea of putting those different phases of software development into these different boxes here. So when you look at this slide, you can see everybody's going to have probably a source code repository. They're going to have to do some form of development. You're going to do some form of testing your software. You're going to have builds of the software. You're going to have to do some deployment or orchestration of that software into your production or your different types of environments, whether that's dev test or pre-prod, however you want to slice it. And then, of course, you're going to do some form of learning. Now, throughout the bottom pillar of all that, you've got process, which means you're probably gonna have some form of communication collaboration tool there, right? How are you talking amongst one another? How are you tracking changes to your environment? Things like that. Now, when we put this into this overwhelming slide icon thing here, this gives you a really high-level idea of what are some of the Microsoft technologies and where do they fit into these overall lifecycle phases. So, here you can see that there are a lot of technologies that are listed in multiple places. And this is certainly, you know, the case for the open source side of the house too, where they typically fit into a lot of areas. This is more of a reference for you. So if you know that, hey, I really am interested in deployment automation, well, look at the technologies that are listed there and just start to dig in right. And say, okay, oh, I see, like that's I could see how I could use it in that way, mm-hmm. right? Just for you to have an idea. The other thing I want to point out briefly here is, and we'll talk more about this here in the next module, but is the CloudOS consistency. So, you know, Microsoft has this this CloudOS where we have a one consistent platform across on-premises, the cloud, and service providers. Within that, you know, your app in this case has a number of different technologies that are Microsoft related. I just listed some off the top of my head here, but that those technologies would reside potentially on top of that CloudOS platform.
Yeah, and what we're going to do through the rest of this day is look at open source tooling
exactly.
that fits into those.
Exactly.
And you're going to build on that as
exactly.
you go forward.
So we'll go to the next slide here so we can tie into
hey,
the open source.
It's almost like you were
That's
prepared.
Right. Hey, how about that, right? Yeah, so this is the, you know, the common question that I get a lot is, you know, back to that concept of where does something fit? Well, we use technology X that you see on this list here. So either the question is in different forms, why do I need Microsoft blah, or why do I want it, what could I use this with, or whatever, right? So this slide by no means, and this is where Ross and I have had a lot of discussion here, where these technologies are listed here is not the all-encompassing definition of what these technologies can do. Okay, so let's be clear on that. This is listed in these buckets because they are typically the, I'd say the most common integration point between the Microsoft technologies that we have in the projects that we utilize.
Yeah, so each of these projects we've done some work with to enhance how they plug together into each of the boxes that they're in there. As David says, they can be used elsewhere, but the kind of work that we've been doing has been focusing on integrating into the tooling that we have elsewhere in those boxes.
Exactly, exactly. So if we go to the next slide here, we have it's important that we point out Ross is from the MS Open Tech team. We have a full team of folks that are dedicated to open source software here at Microsoft, and they have a lot of different things. As you can see here in this list, DevOps and then the projects under DevOps are the things we're going to be focusing on today per the previous slide. But there are a lot of other open source projects that this team works on. Microsoft as a whole is extremely committed to open source.
Absolutely. It's important to say, although we are a team and a separate team in that sense, we are consistently working with other teams across the board. So, of course, in the DevOps role, I work a great deal with the Azure teams and also with DevDiv, with the tooling that we have there. So it isn't all happening with us. Definitely not. It's increasingly happening across the whole company.
Yep. So, you know, this is the high-level overview we've had for this module. The technologies you saw on the previous slide, we're actually going to dive into a bit more depth, so you have a little bit of understanding there throughout the course of the day. If you want to know more about DevOps, because we've given you a very condensed, compressed view of DevOps, right? If you want to know more about DevOps, we have a lot of content here at Microsoft on that. The DevOps homepage you can see up there up top. There's various resources for IT or operations folks related to DevOps. There's sessions at TechEd Europe. There's also a number of specific courses that I want to call out there. And also, not listed explicitly, although it is embedded inside the resources for IT Ops, we have an Edge show where we've done a number of episodes, including a couple here with Ross.
Always fun.
That's right, related to DevOps. So check those out to learn more about DevOps in general. From here on out, we're going to just be kind of diving into open source tools. So. Now, I did say that this is going to be most of the rest of the time about tools, but that being said, right, we kind of covered the DevOps, what is DevOps, and we said that it is about people, and it is about this thing called process. So what I'd like to do right now is invite a colleague, Edward, on, and he's going to come in and talk a little bit about process, as well as we want to set a foundation here with how you might get going with Azure, because a lot of the things that we talk about throughout the rest of the day relate to Azure. There's somebody new here. Who is this? Who are you? Can you tell us about yourself?
I'm Edward Koller. I'm a senior program manager with Microsoft Open Technologies, in which role I'm creating technical bridges between Microsoft technologies and open source software. And this includes things like tooling for Linux on Azure, VM Depot, which you'll see it's a nice community catalog of pre-configured virtual machine images, and also bringing other cool open source technologies to the Microsoft Cloud, to Azure.
Okay, awesome. All right, so before we get into the process tools part, I want to make sure that we cover really briefly some Azure fundamentals, because a lot of things that we're doing after the course of the rest of the day starts talking about Azure stuff. And by no means we're going to give you a depth dive here. There's a lot of great resources to learn in depth about Azure on MVA and websites and a lot of other things, but I want to give you a kind of quick primer here. So to start off, I've got a few slides just on Azure at a high level, one of which is the Azure footprint. Microsoft has the most data centers of any major cloud provider, and we have 19 around the world. Now, each of those data centers is about the size of a football field. So for those of you who aren't familiar with American football, that equals about 2 jumbo jets could fit on about 1 football field. Now, for each one of those buildings, you could fit roughly 600,000 servers. And for any one particular data center location, we may have up to 16 of those buildings. So it just gives you kind of a rough idea of this type of scale that we're talking about here, and Microsoft investing billions of dollars in data centers around the world. The other thing I want to point out is Microsoft Azure has a lot of different technologies and services under that hood. You'll notice at the top here, there's a lot of different programming languages and tools to interact with Azure, but we have IaaS, or infrastructure as a service, as well as PaaS services. And one of the big things there with us is that both of those things can interact relatively easily between IaaS and PaaS. You know, when Azure first started, we started off with PaaS services and eventually grew and added IaaS. So, you know, we have a lot of those things. Now, your application could use one or more of any of these different types of services. I will say in general throughout today, we're primarily focused on IaaS and virtual machines. Okay, another thing I want to cover is Azure being open, broad, and flexible. Because there's no way we have time today to cover all of this, but these are just some of the things that we cover across a wide range of platforms. So you can see up here, the programming languages that we can use is not just .NET. We have PHP, Node.js, Python, Java. All of these types of languages are supported in different ways and capacities on the Microsoft platform. Furthermore, there's a lot of different content management systems which are open source focused, right? So things like Joomla, Drupal, WordPress, and then of course devices, right? We have Azure Mobile Services, which supports Android, iOS as well. And then databases, right? We have Hadoop, Oracle. We're the only person that's officially certified right now to support Oracle workloads on virtual machines for our cloud platform. So, and then of course, a number of varieties and flavors of Linux, which you'll see today. So the other thing which I think is really important to point out here is Microsoft has a cloud OS strategy or vision. And this is a big differentiator for a lot of folks that are out there in the cloud space. And when we look at this, we can see that, you know, our strategy is to have one consistent platform across the public cloud, which is Microsoft Azure, on-premises, which would be things like Azure PAC and System Center, as well as service providers. So ideally, when you do something that, you know, create some app or service that you utilize, it could be a consistent way to manage it, have a same identity structure, the same development structure across all three platforms. This is pretty unique because Microsoft, of course, has a long history and tradition of investments in on-premises software. And we, as you can see, have huge investments in the public cloud. And we're the only one that really has such a comprehensive view of the world. You know, hybrid does not equal we have a connector so that you must port your stuff up into the cloud. it's much more in depth, right, than that, because we have the ability for you to run a full private cloud using our software, which, you know, the vision is that to mirror almost exactly what we see in our public cloud. So the vision is, right, you run Azure on premises, it's the same as you would in the public cloud. So I want to now switch over to give you a really quick primer on Microsoft Azure. So assuming you don't really know anything about Microsoft Azure, what are some of the things you need to do just to kind of get going, get started? So for that, I'm going to switch to a demo here. Let me get my machine up. And the first thing I want to point out is that there are kind of two, I'd say, major ways that you can get started to trying Azure. One is through a trial. Now, today, this is a limited time span, but you get about a $200 credit, which allows you to have spin up whatever services you want inside of Microsoft Azure. The other one, which is a longer-term solution, is MSDN. So if you are a developer and you have an MSDN subscription, that gives you a certain amount of credits per month, anywhere from $50 to $150 a month in recurring credits. So after you get there, the first thing you're going to do is log in to the Azure Management Portal. And when you log in here, one of the things you might want to do is, let's say you have in this theme in light of DevOps, you want to give your ops guy also access to your environment, or perhaps even another developer. So what you could do here is go into the very bottom of this list and go into settings and choose administrators. And then here we can very easily add, just based on an email address, somebody who has access to whatever particular subscription you'd like. That then would then allow them to log into this portal as well and utilize that same credit that you happen to have. Now, after you have this in place, you might want to realize, or you might have a pop-up come and realize that there's two different portals that are here to allow you to access the different resources. We have in the portal here, portal app.azure.com is a preview portal for Microsoft Azure. And this does enable a number of unique capabilities, all of which we don't have time for today, but I want you to be aware of it. It's something that you might want to check out. One of the big things is, I'll call out, is resource groups. So this concept of resource groups doesn't really exist in the old portal. And when I talk about this, you know, you can see here that we have different applications. And an application could consist of a lot of different things. For instance, if you have a two-tier database where there's a website and a virtual machine and a SQL database, if you go to the old portal, you'll notice there's just a sea of things. And everything in the view of everything is listed by, you know, what is the resource type, right? But if I had an app that was, let's say, multiple VMs or a VM and a PaaS service, there's really no logical way to view that in the old portal. Whereas in the new portal via this resource group, as you can see, right, we have the ability to add additional resources into a resource group, and then we have one logical way to look at costs for that application, monitoring across a number of different resources, and we also have the ability to do this role-based access control. So if you wanted to give people access to, let's say, just an application or just an app or that resource group, you could add them here, which is not lit up in the old portal. So in the old portal, remember, or the current portal, I should say, you have, you know, this administrator access. This gives people full access to the subscription. Whereas when you go into the new portal and you have a resource group and give them access to that resource group, they now only have access to whatever is inside of that resource group. So kind of just something as far as when you get started, just something to think about, right? If you're trying to provide other people access to collaborate and work on things, you kind of have two major vehicles here to get people in and working with you on that. Now, after that, let's say, you know, you've kind of got that foundation, that you've got a trial started, you've got some people that have access into the subscription. Now you're going to probably want to start creating stuff, right? Well, what does that look like in Microsoft Azure? The first thing you probably want to do is create a storage account. And if you go to the portal and create new, and then go to data services, storage, quick create, here we have the ability to create a name. Let's just call it my demo storage 123. Maybe that one's not taken. Now you'll notice here this has a unique name, asterisk.core.windows.net, because that's the unique identifier of how things know where your storage is located. The location or affinity group just says where is that going to be stored, which data center do you want to store that storage account in, which subscription do you want it, and then we also have a number of different storage account options, of which have different advantages, disadvantages, which we don't have time to get into, the cheapest of which is locally redundant. Now, after I create that, you now have the ability to put things like virtual machines into your environment. So if I click on new, create a virtual machine from gallery, right? I can then go in through this experience to create a new VM based on the number of ones that we have here and put that into, you know, keep that VM stored in my storage account. So once you have that storage account, and let's say you want to create a VM, there's an important concept that you need to understand, which is a cloud service. Now, cloud service is the logical way in which you're going to be have external access into that particular service, whether that's a VM or an actual PaaS cloud service in your environment. So if we snap back to the screen here, we can see that I've got, let's say here, this Jenkins VM that I've loaded, and it's inside of this cloud service. And when I look at this, I can see that there's a particular name here that's associated with this cloud service. So so down at the bottom here, I've got jenkinsvmdemo.cloudapp.net. So anytime you see that cloudapp.net, that's the name that's going to have automatically a public IP address. So in this case here, right, I've got a public IP address if that cloudapp.net will resolve to. And this then enables me to have different endpoints as well. So if I want to SSH into my Linux VM, you'll notice here the standard port 22, that's how from the outside world I would then connect up to that virtual machine. So once you go and spin up this thing, that's how you have access. And if you want to, let's say, control access to that VM, you could go into the virtual machine itself, go into endpoints, And here I have the ability to add different endpoints, right? Or, you know, remove endpoints that are there. For security, I could do also create different ports for the public or the private ports. If I wanted to, let's say, make a public port of some, you know, 20,000, and then that maps to 22, that way you would SSH into the randomized port and then still get SSH access in. Okay, we've kind of covered a lot here. Tried to give you like the cram course into kind of getting going with Azure. And with that, I want to snap over into away from the basics and into the kind of process tool side of the house. So let me go to my couple slides here that we have before we'll have Edward go into a demo. process tools. Why do we need these things? Why do they even matter, right? I don't know. What do we use them for? Edward, what do you see people using process tools for?
Well, to get things done.
To get things done. Okay. Well, that's kind of important, right?
Yeah. So to automate things, basically to streamline the all the steps from starting a project, for example, to getting it actually deployed and live. So starting to writing code, deploying it, testing it, and until actually launching the application in production.
So I mean, you need some way to track changes and kind of have some form of a way to have collaboration, communication across all these different things that you're doing. Now, there's a lot of different tools that you can use here, and you're going to show us some of those. Now, GitLab is one of the ones that you're going to actually launch for us, correct?
Yes.
You'll show what that is like. And what is GitLab, just as an example? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. I mean, you've got version control. It looks like here you've got version control, repository management, different kinds of things that virtual machine, that service would do, right?
Yes. And we have GitHub, for example, allows users to collaborate, to code, create new projects, manage repositories, and perform code reviews, for example.
Okay. So how do we get access to all these different tools that are out there, right? I mean, there's this concept of a VM Depot. And what is the VM Depot?
VM Depot is a community catalog of pre-configured virtual machine images with various technology stacks, from the simple LAMP stack, Linux with Apache, MySQL, and PHP, to various frameworks, various content management systems, or even a Minecraft server. So there are hundreds and hundreds of various pre-configured virtual machine images that Azure users can just directly deploy to their Azure account.
Okay, yeah. And I see that's kind of through the MS Open Tech team, and I'm assuming different communities can submit things to that, right?
Yeah. Yes, all the images available in VM Depot are submitted by community members.
Okay, cool. Great. Yeah, so I'd love to see it in action. So why don't we see what this looks like here for, you know, spinning up using the VM Depot and let's say creating an image from that. Can you show us in a demo here?
Happy to do so.
Okay. Cool.
So in order to use VM Depot, you need two things: an internet browser and an Azure account. Starting with the internet browser, you point it to vmdepot.msopentech.com, and here you can see the large list of virtual machine images available. You can just go next, browse through them, and so on. You can also search. Let's say I want to search for GitLab, which will filter all the images, all the various versions of GitLab images available in VM Depot. So we have several versions here, and I can pick one of them. Now, once on this page, I have several details about the image, who is the publisher, the platform, what packages I want it, what are the endpoints that needed to be opened besides SSH, besides 22. For example, for GitHub, we need 80 and 443, so the HTTP and HTTPS. And once we have this image, we can directly click on Create Virtual Machine in order to provision this image as a virtual machine on Azure. I will sign in with my live ID. Now, once I'm signed in with my live ID, VM Depot will automatically load my Azure profile. And I will be able here to just quickly create a virtual machine based on this image. I will have to give it a username, a password for it.
You could, of course, use certificates if you wanted, and in different, maybe a different context here, right?
Yes, you can use certificates. You can use a password as well. And if I want, so by default, VM Depot gives me picks a DNS name for me, which will be the URL of the VM once being live. So using this URL, I will be able to access my my virtual machine, both to SSH and to a web browser. Also, there are some details here, like the VM name, the size, the region, and so on. If I want to configure these, I can click on the advanced. And here I can configure several details from the subscription that I want to deploy this in. And I can choose here from several subscriptions that I have available to adding new endpoints, or picking which region I want to deploy it in. For example, I will deploy it here in the West US region. Automatically, VM Depot picks a storage account for me. If I want to create a new one, I can create one from this page. And once I'm happy with all the details here, I just click on Create Virtual Machine. Of course, I have to accept the terms of agreement first. And just click on create virtual machine, and VM Depot will contact the Azure backend and will start the process of provisioning, of creating a virtual machine based on the image that I provided from VM Depot and using the settings that I provided. And in this UI, we have some details. We'll have a status update, a progress bar that shows us how the creation of the virtual machine progresses. But the good news is that I don't have to wait, basically, in this page for the machine to be created. When I logged on to VM Depot, one of the informations that I provided is an email address. And in this case, I can just close the browser, and I will be notified. I will receive an email as soon as the virtual machine is created.
Yeah. So this is just to kind of recap. I mean, this is I showed you very briefly in the Azure intro the new gallery image, and on the old portal that actually doesn't pull up the VM Depot images that's there.
Yes,
so just to be clear,
correct.
Right? But there is ways that you could do the same thing in the new Azure portal, which I briefly highlighted, or in a kind of hidden spot inside of the current management portal to pull those images down.
That's correct. And there is actually a third way to create these virtual machine images, which is through command line tools. So if you are not a UI person but more of a command line person, then you can do all these things directly from command line. Whether you are running on a Linux desktop, like I'm here, or from a Mac desktop, or from a Windows desktop, you can use exactly the same command line commands to create and manage your virtual machines. For example, I would switch quickly here to my Mac desktop to show you how this can be done from a command line. So first, I will go again to VM Depot in order just pick an image. I will go again with a GitLab image that I had before, and instead of clicking on the Create Virtual Machine, I will get a deployment script. So by clicking on Create Deployment Script, I get the entire command line that I just have to modify to use my username and password, and then I can just copy paste it to the terminal, and I get I get the VM created. So I will do this quickly.
Okay, why don't...
I will replace my username and password.
So while you're typing that, just to kind of recap here, I mean, this is utilizing the Azure CrossPlat CLI tools, right? So this is the ability for you to have these, you install these tools, and you can now, via this command line script, provision these virtual machines.
What I'm doing here, I'm modifying the command line just to give a specific name to my virtual machine, and then I add the details for the logon details. Now I will just copy-paste this command. My terminal.
So now it should be a little bit easier for you to see here. And you can see, it looks like it's creating. Okay, so you're creating a cloud service, which we talked about what that is before. And okay, so this is one thing here. This is a good learning lesson as it goes through here. The cloud service name you're trying to create is already in use. So again, what I mentioned here earlier is, right, that cloud service name needs to be unique, because that's how, from an external perspective, you know that it has a unique IP address and access point into that particular system. So that's where, you know, that name you choose is unique. So maybe you've chosen something with a 1 or a 2 or something after that. What do we have here?
Exactly. So it just happened that I ran exactly the same command line before. So that cloud service was in use, okay, because I created a bit earlier. Okay. So let me change it. I just changed the one with 2, and this should just work.
Okay. So this is
good. While this is being created, let me show you shortly, briefly, the email that I received for the virtual. So I mentioned when I've shown you how to deploy the image directly from VM Depot, I mentioned that once everything is done, you will receive an email, a confirmation email, with details about the VM and also with a URL, just in case you forgot it, with a URL where you can access the virtual machine. This is how the email looks like. And from here, you can just copy the URL, put it in a browser. And here is.
There we go. There's GitLab. So that is one unique thing that's the cool about this, doing the provisioning via that portal, right? Which is that you have this email that gets sent to you. I mean, that's different, right? You spin this up, exactly, in the Azure portal, you don't get a fancy email. So
yes, in Azure, you can wait or go back after that. From VM Depot, we are notifying the user. Basically, we're trying to minimize the time that you have to wait for things to happen. You can just go, start the VM creation, and just leave, get the email notification, and you can just log on or SSH, okay, into your machine, or do whatever you want to do with that machine from directly, okay, from using the information from the email.
And to connect that portal into the Azure subscriptions itself, is that a management certificate? Is it just a log on as a user that has access, or what needs to happen there?
In order to be able to access your Azure subscription, we are using the publish settings, which contain a publish setting file. It's a file that contains management certificate and details about your subscription. So when I log on with my live ID, then I have the option to actually add that certificate, publish settings file to my VM Depot account, and everything that I will do will happen within the context of one of the subscriptions that I pick from that file.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. All right, well, I think, so just to kind of recap here, I mean, thank you so much, Edward, for your time.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so I think just to kind of recap here on this module, we've given you a foundation of kind of getting going with Azure. We've also given you a kind of a quick start here, thanks to Edward, on the VM Depot. So if you want to provision a number of these different process tool VM images, it's relatively straightforward and easy for you to kind of get going. In this case, we use GitLab. But this kind of helps with that continuation of the story of starting some form of collaborative effort and process tools, regardless of whether you use Microsoft or whether you use open source, to kind of move forward in the overall life cycle. So with that, we will be back in about 10 minutes, so stay tuned.